welcome to the podcast from the classroom of Heidelberg Theological Seminary. I'm Lee Johnson, your host, and with me, Dr. Maynard Kerner, president of Heidelberg Theological Seminary, and Dr. J.P. Mosley, academic dean and professor at Heidelberg Theological Seminary. We've been talking in the previous podcasts about worship. And we've been going through some of the commandments about how the first four commandments teach us about the worship of God, about who, how, and we're on the third commandment today about where, and we're taught where to worship. Let me read the third commandment before we get going from Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. So, Dr. Kerner, would you explain to us how that tells us where to worship our Lord?
Well, we tend to think of the commandment in terms of blaspheming the name of God, which is, of course, a way in which the name of God is taken in vain. But the core of that is the name of God. And so where is the name of God? And it has to do with, you will find, and I would start by looking at when God calls Abraham into the land of Canaan, and he travels through the land, and he stops in Shechem and at Bethel, and worships God, and there is a clear connection there that God has written his name there. And so the idea of approaching God is where God has written his name. To approach God in a place where his name is not written is to blaspheme the name of God. You see that then later again in the tabernacle worshipings, because God's presence is there. God's presence is with the writing of his name. So where does God written his name in the New Testament? Well, he's written his name in the hearts of all of his people. And so when his people together as for corporate worship, that's where God's name is. So the place of worship is where God's people meet to worship and call upon him.
Yeah, so Moses actually carries that theme from the life of Abraham with the name and Shechem, and it carries through all the way, as Dr. Kerner pointed out, with the tabernacle. And Moses makes it very clear that there's going to come a day where there's going to be an established place, and it's where his name will dwell. That he will let them know this is the place, and there were going to be a centralized area for the people to gather to worship. The tabernacle had very much the idea of God being in the midst of his people, and eventually there's going to be a fixed location where they all will then gather, call upon the name of the Lord, which is what worship is the calling upon the name of the Lord through singing, through prayer, and then hearing his word and responding with yes, Lord, which is again another part of the third commandment. Yes, everything that we've heard, yes, we believe this. This is a part of our faith. This is a part of your word, and we agree. We would love to hear more and can't wait for next week in some respects. And then they get to close out with the benediction, which is God's name and God's blessing and God's grace being put upon them for them to go out into the remainder of their week and serve him and all of the things sing and do.
Now we do need to, of course, in that regard, understand that we are talking about formal worship. There are a number of ways that we can describe that, but we're talking about what takes place when God's people have gathered formally to call upon him. Are there other ways in which the word worship can be used? Sure, we talk about family worship at home, etc. But particularly, and I think this is something that we need to pay some attention to as we think a lot about worship these days, and that is that worship is not just something we can willy-nilly set up and do at any place anytime we want to. We worship with the public gathering of God's people. And for anybody to go out, whether he's out fishing or whatever, and say, well, you know, this is really a great morning tonight, and so I'm worshiping God when I'm doing that. To call that worship, I think, is taking the Lord's name in vain, because the Lord has not written his name there for worship. That may seem a little strong, but I think that's something to consider.
So if this worship is the gathering together, Is there a number? How many need to gather together? You just said we couldn't do it by ourselves. So
Well, we always want to be very careful with that. People like to quote the verse where two or three are gathered in my name, I am with them. That's really not dealing with worship. That's dealing with church discipline. But it's more, I don't think it's the number, it's more of the formal call and with God's people. Certainly we can worship with a small group. Many of us have done that at different times. The fact that God has written his name on his people, I think speaks to the idea of not the building, not where God has written a name. This is a building for worship, but he has written his name on us. We are the building. And as we gather together, that's the sanctuary of God's people where God meets with them for worship.
And as we continue in our discussions on worship, there is an aspect of what makes worship legitimate type of worship versus a schism, sectarian group, is that there is official worship. Worship where it is overseen by elders. There are ministers present. And when you sit back and you say, well, my family, we're just going to stay home and as a dad, I'm just going to lead them in worship. That's not what the Bible wants to portray as actual worship. There are official. In fact, when you move to the book of Titus, there's a sense where there are churches that are there, possibly, and this is what Dr. Knight argues for in his commentary, churches there since Pentecost. There were Cretans at Pentecost and were converted. They went back home and brought the gospel with them, but yet Paul leaves Titus there on his way to Rome in order to establish things that were not yet in order. And an aspect of that is raising up ministers and elders so that the worship there has oversight, has direction, has proper doctrine and teaching. And so that also must be understood when we talk about the actual gathering together of God's people for corporate, formal, you use the word formal, we could also apply that to official. There's officers now. Even with our mission works, there's officers that still oversee that. We tend to put ministers in places there that have got some training, that have got years of experience, because they've covered answers. They've got ways of doing things. But more importantly, they're ministers, there's elders. That's then we can begin to talk about the formal gathering of a corporate worship of a body of believers. And you know, it's with the ministers that, well, as we begin to talk about some of the elements, there's your salutation, there's your benediction, there's the sermon, there's the preaching of the word. While before that, there's exhortation, there's some differences, there's distinctions that we make with what's happening. And it's very important that we recognize that there are officers that are to be in the churches, that are to be overseeing what's going on as well. It can't just be at a local Starbucks or in somebody's home. That leads to some questionable activity.
Well, to pick up on the passage I mentioned earlier in Matthew 18, where two or three are gathered, is not really talking about worship, but it is in the context of who oversees worship. It is the officers in common.
That's right.
And so when they are together, God is in their names. And I believe there's a sense in which we can say, we call it the spiritual council in the RCOS, when worship is, it's the spiritual council meeting with the people of God. It's not just the pastor setting up shop. We have nowadays, some individual sets up shop and says, okay, we're having church. No, it's the court of the church, and it's most basic, the eldership, a local. They are calling people to worship. They're there, and it is God who has also said, when we think about baptism, the Great Commission, make disciples and baptizing them. That's God writing his name on his people. So there again, you have the idea of where do we worship? Where God has written his name.
And to piggyback off of the idea of call to worship, I've asked people before, well, who's calling us? And they'll say, well, it's God. It's from his word. I said, but yeah, but who's using that word to call us into worship? And the answer is the spiritual council. It's the elders and ministers of this local church. They are the ones issuing that call, and it sometimes it's every Sunday at the same time. Other times we have to change it for circumstances, maybe the Lord's Supper, maybe like recently with COVID, there's been some changes with that. Maybe you end up having, I think you guys here are having a couple of services. That's a couple of calls. And so, you know, those circumstances may change, but the reality of the fact is that you've got these officers, the elders, the ministers, they have set this time aside to call the people by the name of the Lord into a certain place, whether it's a storefront, whether it's an auditorium at a school, or a building like this that is called, typically called church, a church building, for a time of worship. And it's under the name of Christ, the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that they're being called for that.
And you mentioned, Dr. Kerner, a minute ago about baptism, putting the Lord's name on his people. Does that also tell us a little bit about who is all allowed to come to worship?
Well, exactly. Worship is for God's people. And that's an important aspect, I think, in the idea of the Great Commission again. We tend to emphasize the mission aspect, calling people to come, but it equally says baptizing them, which means to recognize them as being part of the church, the organized church. And we can have interesting discussions about whether a one-year-old or a three-year-old or a 10-year-old or so on. And certainly there's times in which very little ones need to be taken care of. But God calls all his people, and which is a whole other argument, but is related to the idea of the children are part of the covenant, and therefore God's name is to be written on them because that is God's people. He calls them to worship.
And so, well, we probably shouldn't get too much into infant baptism there. I kind of like that argument.
That's a whole nother, it's a whole nother door that I just kind of opened up and peeked through a little bit. Yeah. But there's a long road to go down there. So, okay.
Well, let me ask you then about you mentioned how in the New Testament it's written on our hearts. We're sort of the building. Does this relate to some of the imagery we see in places like 1 Peter chapter 2 about being living stones, being built up a spiritual house to offer up spiritual sacrifices? That's verse 5, and it goes on there. Is that sort of the same?
I think very much. That's a beautiful imagery when you think about it. You know, a building is made out of stone, a building, at least a building at the time of Christ, in the ancient world, and a building has a foundation. But the building, or the picture, the imagery, to use your word that's used there, is stones that are living. Normally, stones themselves don't grow, but a stone that's living is a stone that is growing, and it's growing in two ways. Each individual stone is growing, and more stones are being added in, so the building is growing. And yet it is growing on the name of Christ. Through Christ, the preaching of Christ, the name of God is being written on these stones.
I don't think we need to miss the fact, too, that even with the great, even with the Ten Commandments and with the even with the Great Commission, that yes, you know, these promises are to us and our children, but it's also commands and promises to the world, to the nations. And so, yeah, who should we expect in worship? Well, I'd say we should expect every single person living in this town to come in. That's the expectation of the command. Everybody is commanded to come and worship. Everybody's commanded to call upon the name of the Lord. And if you don't, you're breaking the command. If you don't gather, that's a breaking of the command. Now, Dr. Kerner and I were talking earlier today that the Bible does give excuses for some people to not, you know, you're sick, sometimes women with children, you're at war, police officers, firefighters, they all have reasons for not having to be here. But the command is there nonetheless. And then when you get the Great Commission, there's obviously there's the issue of going out to the nations and baptizing, making disciples, teaching them. And that making disciples could be our children, but it's also those that are still lost in our cities and in our towns. And we don't need to miss the fact that they're also, with that call from the elders and the ministers, they're also called to come. They're also called to be there. It's that is a direct call for visitors to be here, for people to come in. And there is an evangelistic aspect of that call, to come and hear the gospel.
We could take the concept of the name written. We, as the people of God, have gone through the place, that is the gathering of God's people. And then as we go forward, we're taking Christ's name with us. And so, again, there's a connection there with the name, that as the unbeliever out there sees what it means for people who have the name of Christ written on them. And they, yes, they go to church on the Lord's Day, but they live a certain life. And by that life, there is a call then to the world to answer that call, to respond to that as well.
Well, that gives us a little bit of a segue with, since you said worshiping on the Lord's Day, kind of is a good place to leave it as a tease for the next podcast about when. So we'll wrap up here. I do hope everybody will come back and hear what the Word has to say about when we're to worship the Lord. Thanks for listening to From the Classroom, Heidelberg Theological Seminary, and we'll see you next time.